All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your hosts for today's program, Dale Thronberry and Bob Gould.
Here we are again. Welcome to Veterans Radio. Bob Gould and Dale Thronberry coming to... Whoa, what was that? Whatever that was. Dun, 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 dun. That's somebody signaling us. Dale.
What?
Hey, my partner.
Welcome. 14 years.
14 years.
Golly.
How'd we do that?
We don't live together. That's why. that's how we did that one. Bob, I wanted to congratulate you and us for doing 14 years.
Amen.
We want to thank Ken Rogge, and of course, we want to thank Gary Lilly, who unfortunately has passed away. But Gary and Ken are both always in our hearts and in our minds when we do our programming. So we want to thank those guys for being there when we got this whole thing off the ground back at WSDS.
SDS.
In Ypsilanti, Michigan, November 15th, 2003.
Well, it's been a great ride. Maybe we'll have another 15, have the 30th anniversary.
That would be good. Maybe we'll get double Social Security by then.
Well, it depends on who's in the White House, but we won't even talk about that right now. You've got some things that are coming up.
Excuse me, I do. There's so many things happening this week. Of course, as they say, this is our busy time because Veterans Day is coming up next Saturday. But locally, we've got a couple of movies that are going to be shown. And the first one is, it's called Enlisted. And this is a documentary that's going to be on WDET, the local public television station in Detroit, tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. It's a documentary done by a good friend of ours, Keith Famey, one of the executive producers is another good friend of ours, Bob Gillette, and it follows the reason that people join the service. It's so timely from what we were talking about for doing today, Bob. When I got this, I thought that was great. So anyway, so we're going to be talking with Keith in the second half of the program about the documentary Enlisted, and it talks about why did people join. What did they get out of their time during the service, which is kind of the theme of today's program. And so we want to make sure that you, listeners out there, if you want to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call here at WHAM. The local number is 734-822-1600, 734-822-1600. And
they never put that down.
I finally remembered it. So that's part of it. And we do. We really encourage you, if you are able to, is to give us a call and let us know about why you joined the service. And we'll get into that a little bit later. So that's tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. It's called Enlisted. It's on Detroit Public Television. The other movie that is going to be shown locally is a documentary. It's a free documentary. It's called The Burn Pits. And we were talking about this a little earlier in the day. And this is... this is sort of this generation's Agent Orange, in that in Iraq and Afghanistan, what they would do on a daily basis is burn all their waste. And I don't just mean body waste. I mean
computers,
excess ammunition, shell casings,
leather,
supplies, whatever it is. And so these things give off toxic fumes. As you know, many of you, you know, if you have a fire in your house, the thing that's going to hurt you is when your couch catches on fire because it's made of all kinds of synthetic stuff. So it's not good for you. And this documentary is called Delay, Deny, and Hope You Die. And this is another sad tale about some things that that occur in the Veterans Administration. And again, we're not taking shots at the hospitals, but sometimes the bureaucracy gets in the way here. So it's called Delay, Deny, and Hope You Die. It's going to be shown at the Phoenix Theaters here in southeastern Michigan. Tomorrow it's in Livonia, and that's at Laurel Park, 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Tuesday it's in Wayne, Michigan, again 2 and 7. And on Wednesday it's in Monroe, Michigan, again at 2 and 7 o'clock. This is sponsored by Legal Help for Veterans. And if you need more information or you want to find out more about the tickets and so forth, you can contact our partner Jim Falsone at Legal Help for Veterans.
I saw
that. I'm planning on going to see it. I think it's tomorrow is the one I'm going to go
see. I actually saw that. I saw that about 2 weeks ago at a fundraiser, and I had no idea what they were talking about.
Serious problem, Bob.
He did two tours, and he talked about what they did each day. And it was breakfast at 0600 and lunch at 1200, and then 1800 to 2300 was burn pit. And I looked at that and I thought, what's he talking about? I had no idea until you told me.
It's just, you know, we got to pay attention to what's going on around here. Many of the times they ask us to go places and do things, and they don't necessarily tell us what some of the risks are by going there. I mean, we all know we can get shot at and so forth, but they don't tell us about the environmental issues that might infect us. You know, I was talking about Agent Orange, and, you know, now we've got this burn pit stuff, and we got to pay attention. And it's up to us as veterans and all the veteran service organizations and so forth. We've got to let Congress know. Otherwise, it'll just fade away.
That's
they'll deny,
right.
They'll delay, and then they'll wait for us to die.
Okay.
On that high note, but I've got another great story. Oh, the last thing that's coming up is on Wednesday evening here in Ann Arbor, and it is called Stories of Service, again, going along with the theme of today. And this is Stories of Service. It's an evening with veterans at Hill Auditorium in Ann Arbor, and it's on Wednesday, November 8th at 7 o'clock. All you got to do is just walk into Hill Auditorium. It's not a bad idea, though, if you try to RSVP, and you can do that at storiesofservice.org. That's storiesofservice.org.
Can you be a civilian, of course?
You can, of course you can. And this is a big fundraiser for the Fisher House, Michigan. And this is what where everybody is coming through and making sure that that we raise enough money to put that Fisher House out at the Ann Arbor VA. So we're going to be the first Fisher House in Michigan will be hopefully as a result of some of these things. So I hope to see you there. Hill Auditorium, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. You'll be there, right?
Of course they will.
Yeah, well, you don't even know who that is, right?
Okay, so now it's segue time. And this, oh, by the way, folks, with Veterans Day coming up November the 11th, check your local restaurants. A lot of them will be giving complimentary dinners. One of them is Applebee's. They always have a nice selection out there. So Applebee's is one. That steak place, the Lone Star.
I think all of them. Dunkin' Donuts is giving you a donut. All the different donut shops around here are giving out food.
Yeah.
So all you got to do is show a card that shows that you're a veteran, and you'll get probably a complimentary meal. You can start off at 6 a.m. at Bob Evans and go from there.
You can have a whole day of it. Well, speaking of folks, today's program is going to be about we're going to be talking with other veterans. And we're going to be talking about what they did in the service and what it meant to them. Our first guest today is Marianne Beauchamp, who right here is from the Chesapeake Bay area. Her duty stations included Fort Meade, Maryland, Walter Reed Hospital, Fort Bliss, Texas. She missed Desert Storm by 30 minutes. Wow, that was kind of close.
It sure was, Bob.
Let me get you a little bit closer to that microphone. There we go. Yeah, okay. It sure was, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay. Well, tell us about that.
Well, I was stationed at Fort Meade, Maryland, and I had a phone call on my answering machine from my assistant chief nurse. And the message was to call as soon as possible. Now, things were already heating up in the Middle East there, and we were on deployable status, but this was in the day before beepers and cell phones. So I called my assistant chief as soon as I got in, and she said, "Don't worry about it. We already sent Lieutenant Hurd in your place." Whoa, did I dodge a bullet there?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, figuratively and literally speaking.
Yes.
And well, how did that dovetail with your training in the Army? You were a captain.
I was.
And you were a nurse.
Yes.
Great. All right. So tell us about that. You joined the Army when you were 19. I know I'm doing the whole thing, but right. You joined the Army when you were 19. Take it from there.
Okay. So I was a sophomore at Villa Maria College in Erie, Pennsylvania in the nursing program. And I was working every weekend at a nursing home. During the week, I was doing work study at the college in the communications office. And I was kind of tired trying to balance my studies and my work. And it was tedious. So I had this letter in my mailbox saying that I was eligible for an ROTC scholarship. And I thought, oh, they want me in the Army. That is so funny. And then after I tossed the letter, I got to thinking about it. And I'm thinking, scholarship, a monthly stipend. And I remembered all of the stories that my father had from his Army days. And he always had such wonderful stories and warm memories of his experience, the camaraderie, the things that he was able to do, the experiences that he had. And I thought, well, maybe this wouldn't be so bad. So I wrote out about 3 pages of questions to ask, and I went into the ROTC office at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I fired those questions away. And I came back with the idea that this would be a good thing for me. So since I had missed the first 2 years of the ROTC training, then they had me go to Fort Knox, Kentucky, for a basic training.
Well, we've all been there to Fort Knox, right? Mm-hmm. I can see a lot of smiles right now from our listeners. But 8 years later.
Yes.
8 years later. You did 8 years. You were on active duty, 4 years inactive. You were in the nursing. You're in the medical field, I guess, right? You can
yes.
say that. What did you, from all your years in this, what did you take out of that? What did you take out and take with you to civilian life?
Well, definitely a sense of duty, honor, and devotion to country. And also, there were things that I did in the military that I will probably never do again. I worked in...
Oh, I'm sure. Especially out in the field, folks. How about that, Dale?
Yeah, you learn to do things that you never thought that you would learn how to do. And I think it probably built up your confidence to a level that you'd never imagine.
Yes, very much so. I learned how to improvise. I learned how to make decisions in a confident manner that needed to be made immediately.
Boy, that confident manner, absolutely. They give you confidence in yourself.
Yes. I actually worked in an intensive care unit during Roving Sands, the largest air defense exercise in the world. And I had to do a rotation in the intensive care unit that they had set up in the field hospital. And I treated patients there in the ICU.
So you got all this training in the Army as well as what you had in college, and that sets you up for the future. Sounds pretty good to me.
Yes.
And it was a nice little piece of duty.
Very valuable.
And obviously, folks, you could tell that she's a female. What did that make you feel to be a female in there? I'm not talking about whether there was harassment. Not about that, but just being a female and doing something like that. Well, what did you take from that?
Well, nursing has become a more diverse profession, and that was very much so in the military too. I think that the nursing field in the military had a higher percentage of males than actually in the general population. But when in the military, your rank is what determines who you are and what kind of respect that you get. And so if I had a captain's rank, I am the same as any other captain in the Army, whether that captain was a physician, a male, a female. It's a microcosm of the society, and everybody's on a level playing field within that rank structure. But getting out of the military and not having that rank structure was a little bit of a challenge.
What do you think of that, Dale?
Well, no, I always have agreed with that. When I got out, because I was a warrant officer, I was a step below real live officers, and I didn't really appreciate the enlisted personnel because I had never associated with them that often. I mean, my crew chief and door gunner, that was it. But after our day in the field, whatever it was, we didn't associate. And I think that finally, by getting involved with all these different veteran service organizations that we've met through being on this program over the years, I have a much higher respect for what they did. And then, you know, of course, you find out that they had a very high respect for the stuff that you did. And so it's kind of this mutual admiration society. And I think you mentioned that with the camaraderie, is that you're never, I don't think you're ever going to have as tight a relationship with a bunch of people as you had when you were in the service.
Yeah.
I mean, because you could tell them anything. You would listen to everything. You each tried to – everybody had everybody's back. And I don't. It didn't necessarily mean that in the field, but also it seemed like in the barracks and so forth that if somebody was having problems, people would jump in and try to figure out how they could help them.
Don Bergitt, who was one of the writers for Band of Brothers, when we had him on the program, I asked him that. It was 01:30 hours, the 6th of June, somewhere over France. And I said, what were you thinking about? You know, your pension, folks back home. What he said, I didn't want to let my buddy down.
Mm-hmm.
Had nothing about Germans or shootings or America or apple pie. Didn't want to let my buddy down.
I think that's the whole thing about being involved with in a team of any type, is that you don't want to let the other person down.
And boy, that starts right from the moment that you get off a bus.
Yes, absolutely. As soon as they rip you apart,
and then
they let you build up again from the pool that was you.
I remember my mother who said goodbye to me at Fort Wayne. Now you do what the sergeant says. Yeah, okay, Ma. Sure, I'll do what he says.
Have a choice?
All right. Yeah. Little did we know. Well, we're going to have Marianne sit right where she's in. And she'll be contributing throughout. And right now, I'd like to go to our phones. And I have with on our phone right now, John Hofstetter. John Hofstetter, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, here we are. You are a 30-year man, 20 years of service in the U.S. Army. You were in Special Forces. You're an engineer. You spent 13 years on jump status. Then were you in the 82nd or the 101st?
I was in the 18th Airborne Corps Unit, the 37th Engineer Battalion, when I first came on jump status. And then the rest of my time on jump status was with 10th Group.
Wow. That's all we said. B Company, 6th Infantry. I mean, hello, look what they've got, folks. I love all this stuff. You were in an elite outfit. What did you, I know, after 20 years, I mean, how many times has somebody asked this, but what did you bring to the civilian life when you left the service? What did you bring?
Well, you know, mid-careers, I made a decision to take a different direction. So I applied for, and my Special Forces training really helped me get ready for, but I applied for and was accepted to the Physician Assistant Program for the military, and I did my last 6 years in the military as a PA, as a physician assistant. So when I did retire, I was fortunate enough to get back into the 3rd Battalion, 10th Special Forces Group as my final unit. And I took all the lessons as being a PA, working in support roles, as well as being a team member and everything. And the military set me up for, you know, quite frankly, a very nice career. I currently work in dermatology, and the Army gave me all the opportunities to have everything that I have now. So, you know, the work ethic and the desire to do well by others and to take care of them and make sure that they have everything that they need so that they can be successful. That was a lot of it.
And you got your training as a PA in the Army, that complete training.
I did.
That's really cool.
It was a great opportunity.
That's so, and so often we hear about how folks have taken their military training off into the civilian world. So that's something that we all have. Dale?
I was looking at that. Thanks. He always throws me a question in the middle of something else I'm thinking about. Well, how come you joined the Army? What was the reason behind that?
I'm probably similar to a lot of other people. I was 17 years old. I was still in high school. I grew up and lived in unincorporated Dade County near Miami. And, you know, I didn't want to go to college. That's not that. That wasn't something I was interested in. I worked in a pizza place that had a little bar, and we had a lot of Vietnam veterans that were in there, and got to know them and hear their stories and stuff. And I couldn't afford a place on my own. I didn't have a friend I trusted to pay his half of the rent. I didn't want to go to college. And a friend of mine was talking to me about junior ROTC in high school, so I did that. And I came out of high school and graduated on June 19th, and on 5 o'clock in the morning or 5:30 in the morning on June 20th, I was on the bus to Fort Leonard, Missouri.
And then from that, 20 years later, you got off the bus. You got off the bus in Miami. Are you back in Florida?
I actually am now. Yeah, I retired in Fort Carson, Colorado, and now I'm in right outside of Fort Lauderdale and here back in South Florida.
And you're part of this canopy parachuting team. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the round canopy parachuting team is an organization. We got members from all over the world and chapters in several different countries. I got back involved in it's military static line parachuting. We do use military parachutes. The SF-10 is a common one. I'm actually still jumping a MC-1-1. Same type of parachute that I used when I was in the military, because I'm more familiar with that. Matter of fact, I made a jump this morning at about 12 o'clock this afternoon at the Stewart Air Show, when we travel to different air shows around the country and do demonstration parachuting teams jumping from old warbirds. I jumped it's called the Tinkerbell was the name of it. It was a C-46 that was used during the war. Yesterday, the day before, we jumped from the C-47, which is called the Tico Bell, which is a warbird used in Normandy and Market Garden, went on to distinguished service in Berlin Airlift and other places. And it's now in Titusville, Florida. And it's just fantastic being able to jump from these old airplanes.
When you go to these air shows, what do the kids ask you? What are some of the most frequent questions you get asked?
Yeah, you know, they're just mostly in awe when they see you and they're talking to you. We wear the M42 uniforms, and a lot of us are wearing, you know, patches of the historical units. They look at the equipment, they look at the parachute, and, you know, basically they're just kind of like, boy, are you really going to do that? And, impressed with what we, you know, and we do it for them, and we come back in, we have demonstration sheets that they can hold on to. So, they're just they seem in awe of the whole process.
Yeah, I know. I saw you folks over here when you were at the Ypsilanti Air Show at Yankee.
I did that one as well. Yeah, I was there as well.
Yes, it was very exciting to see that. You folks may not know, I was with the 101st Airborne Division. And, what was really cool about Airborne is that everybody is airborne, including the cooks, the chaplain, you name it, they all were. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had a young man today. He was a 17-year-old high school kid and who's interested in joining the military, and we were talking to him, and he thinks he'd like to be Special Forces one day, I extrapolate the same thing with just from the airborne units. The nice thing and interesting thing about those units is that everybody's a volunteer to be there, so you're surrounded by people who, even in the airborne units and certainly in Special Forces, who have volunteered extra and have gone through extra training, and they all want to be there. When I was in the 37th Engineer Battalion, everybody was there. If they didn't like it or something, they had a personality conflict or something, they could terminate jump status, and they didn't have to be there anymore, and they would send them down somewhere else. And so being in an airborne unit, I think it provided me a unique opportunity during my career to be with some of the most motivated people that you could be with.
Well, John, you get the last word for this half of the program. What would you like to say to all the folks out there, including some that say, gee, I might want to do that? Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, like you started out at the beginning of the program, you're talking about the Veterans Day and these wonderful companies and everything that are offering the discounts and the free meals. I just would want to remind everybody those waitresses are going to be working harder than ever serving us, so make sure you're tipping them very well.
Right, tip them accordingly, as if you were actually paying for the meal.
Right, right, yeah. So we want them to, you know, I appreciate all the benefits and that my service has provided me, and the gratitude that I've felt from so many people thanking me for my service, offering military discounts. I don't take that for granted at all. I'm very appreciative of all of that, and especially, you know, I've taken advantage of Applebee's as well, and I usually. try to do right by them for working hard for me.
Yes, sir. Boy, we couldn't have said this any better than you did, John. John, we're going to have your Round Canopy folks back on the program again. We want to thank you and your family for letting you have this moment and have this time off on a Sunday. John, you going to come back again?
I'd love to talk to you guys some more.
Okay. God bless.
All right,
wow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Derek, what do we got? One to go. 2 minutes. Two to one. All right. Let's get back to the captain.
Hi.
Okay. What did you think about all that?
I thought it was very interesting. During my time in Fort Meade, Maryland, there was an attachment of special forces there that was reserve, and so, yes, incredible respect for the airborne soldiers and their commitment and their level of bravery and expertise in what they do.
Dale,
it's amazing. It is amazing. Now, when we hear these people talk about, you know, how much that they appreciate whatever the service did for them, we have to look back on it and say how much that they did for us. All of us, everybody in this room and all the people that we seem to talk to on our, you know, we all volunteered, even if we were drafted. We said, you know, we could have run away, but we went down and we said, okay, here, whatever it is you want me to do, we'll do. And that's what we did.
Yes, sir. And I took something out of that. I certainly did. And, whoop. Is the band? Oh, we got the orchestra. Okay, well, we're going to be coming up on the halfway mark here at Veterans Radio. Don't go away. And we're going to be right back with Dale.
Keith Ramey and Enlisted is going to what we're going to be talking to after the break.
So you're listening to Veterans Radio. Don't go away. Back on the band had to get a couple of notes in there. We're back on Veterans Radio. Your host today, Dale Thronberry, Bob Gould, and we also have guests in the studio, Captain Beauchamp.
Yes.
And folks on the phone waiting to come to our program, right? Ready to be there. But a second, this is going to be travel time, and you might want to go up to Frankenmuth for the Michigan Military and Space Heroes Museum. I don't like museums in general, but I really like this one. They really did a great job. Frankenmuth, Michigan, you go there for the chicken, and you can also go there to see Michigan's Military and Space Heroes Museum. Dale, you've got something.
I do. Joining me on our line, I hope, real shortly, is Keith Famey. And Keith is a producer of documentaries. He's done a number of documentaries about veterans, Vietnam generation. He does one about suicide is not the answer. And this one that he's just come out with is called Enlisted. And so I want to welcome Keith to Veterans Radio. Keith, welcome.
Hey, Dale, how are you? Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine. Thank you very much for agreeing to be on the program. I know you're on the road and you're working on another documentary, but let's go back and talk about Enlisted. Where did this idea come from?
Well, when we were working on the film, Death is Not the Answer, which is really about suicide prevention and better understanding depression in America, we featured a section of the film about veterans and PTSD, and I was filming with several different veterans. A few of them were amputees, and one was blind, Major Ivan Castro. I think you maybe talked to him in the past. And I guess it just kind of occurred to me, I thought to myself, why would anybody enlist in the military? What do they get out of it? Or what don't they get out of it? Where does it exceed their expectations, and where does it fall short? And I just really felt that it was an important story to tell to better understand the men and women that put a uniform on for our country and, you know, what drives them.
Right, and that's one of the things that we've been talking about today is why do people enlist and what did they get out of their service? So what did you basically find out for the people that you interviewed?
I think that, you know, the common narrative thread, no matter what their time of service, whether it was in field or not in battle, everyone always came away with they would do it again in a heartbeat. And it was interesting is to hear somebody say that who lost, you know, an arm or a leg or, you know, or were severely wounded. They, you know, they talk about the significance of the time that they spent, but the brotherhood and the camaraderie. And I think that was really what drove me to the film more than anything, is to really understand what that brother sisterhood means and what this camaraderie really means. Because it's, I think in everyday life and society, we have friends and family, but I think until you've walked in their shoes and put a uniform on and spent the kind of time that many of them do, you really understand the significance of that, that term, camaraderie, or brother sisterhood. I mean, it's a loosely used term, but for anybody in the military, it's something that means so much more.
It does. I mean, when we talk about having each other's backs, we've had them, you know, I was in the service 50 years ago, and I still talk to the guys that I went through flight school with, those that are left, unfortunately. And, you know, it's just like we rally around each other just like we did that 50 years ago. And I know it's just the same. Our captain here is nodding her head in the same thing, because these people really did affect us. And we didn't even realize it, I think, at the time.
Yeah, and it transcends through life, which is really, you know, a time of service, maybe 4 years or 8 years, or maybe it isn't lifelong, but the friends and the camaraderie that they forge, it seems to be forever.
Well, the documentary is going to be shown in Detroit tomorrow night on WDET, our local PBS station. And I know that you're going to have your premiere down in Florida, down in Bonita Springs on Veterans Day, correct?
Yes, we had one premiere here in Michigan, and it will be on tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, you know, on Detroit Public Television. And we do have a big premiere on Veterans Day in Bonita Springs. Major Ivan Castro is actually the keynote speaker.
Oh, okay.
So, we're excited about that.
I just had Captain Castro on a couple of weeks ago. He's an amazing young man.
He really is. He's no question about it. And the film, the DVD for the film, is available now on our website.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll definitely.
You have the website.
We will definitely promote that. You talked to a number of veterans here in Michigan. I know. What did you find to be the commonality of their stories?
Well, you know, there are several levels of the film stories. The stories that we have. It wasn't just you know, we featured the war dog. We do a whole story on the history of the war dog, and we featured the actual. Unveiling of the Vietnam War Dog Memorial in South Lyon, which is really special in the film. We filmed a whole understanding with retired Major Jeff Rector, who was a casualty assistance officer for the United States Army. What's the significance, and why do we do military funerals, and what's the significance of them? So, you know, these are other components of the film that I think that are very important and enriching. Michelle Wagger, who's actually from Flint, who lost her leg, you know, in Afghanistan, she's a sensational interview. She's just really good. And she just really tells a very, you know, heartfelt story. But, you know, at the end of the film, she closes the film and she's just dynamite. She says, you know what, I'd do it all over again if I could. And that means so much, you know, to imagine that.
I think it's always amazing when you talk to a number of veterans. I don't think everybody would do it all over again, but I bet you the vast majority of us would be more than happy to go back and do what we did at that time, knowing even though we know what could happen. And that's part of the whole thing. I mean, you touch on so many issues. You've got the military's public image, the draft possibilities, the recruiters. How do they go about recruiting people? You've got Veterans Affairs, which is always a fun organization to talk about. TBI, Service Dogs. We've done a program on them a couple of times up there. And for those of you that aren't familiar with the Michigan War Dog Memorial, it's up at the intersection of Milford and 11 Mile up in South Lyon. And it's a really neat place. I wasn't there for the unveiling of the memorial, but it's amazing. They got the names of all the local dogs that were in the Vietnam War, and the dog handlers were there, and we've got a number that live near here. So it's just a great thing, and I'm anxious to see your documentary. So if we wanted to find out more about it, how do we do that, Keith?
Well, the website is theenlistedfilm.com. Okay. I think that's what it is. listed as. You have the website address, right?
I do. It's enlistedfilm.com.
Yeah, you can go to that. It'll be on tomorrow night, Detroit Public Television, 9 p.m. That's all you really need to know. You know Tyrone Chapman from the Veterans homeless shelter in Detroit?
Yes, we do.
So we did a whole feature down there, and the work that they do for veterans is just astonishing. And, you know, the opiate problem, you know, of course, we understand the significance of that, and that's another really important part of the film. And probably lastly, I just want to recognize, you know, Bob Gillette and retired Brigadier John Cahabi are both the executive producers for this film, that we could never have told this story without those two gentlemen.
Right, and we thank them as well, and we thank you, Keith, for taking the time for talking with us today, and we'll be watching your documentary tomorrow night, and hopefully we can get together. We got another idea for another documentary for
Absolutely.
You. Absolutely. So thank you very much.
I'm all ears, guys.
Okay,
we'll talk to you soon, Keith.
All right, we are going to take. Dale. Thank you very much, Keith. We are going to play the trailer from the documentary. It runs about 3 minutes. Then we'll take a break. We're going to be coming back. We've got another veteran on the phone right now who wants to tell us her story. So we have another woman that's going to be telling us why she joined the military and so forth. So Derek, if we've got that queued up, let's go with it.
Why did you want to go in the service?
I decided to enlist in the United States Marine Corps because they are the best.
I felt it was my duty. I mean, all the young guys were going in, and I felt I wanted to do something.
Everybody was patriotic. Everybody wanted to go.
My father served in the Marine Corps, and I figured it was the best choice.
I just want to protect soldiers and do what I can to help them the best way that I can.
I needed something to structure me.
I was headed down a pretty bad path, and I was probably going to wind up in jail.
I needed to change my life and get out and do something that actually, you know, was worth a while.
It is an excellent opportunity to gain an education.
I thought the Army really fitted me for what I want to do after the military.
Individuals that serve in the military tend to be more successful in their civilian career.
It was just fascinating to me. I wanted to know more about it. I wanted to be a part of it.
The ROTC to me was just interesting.
Being 18 years old, I was all excited about it. You know, I wanted to go.
Life experience that I got out of basic training and then my advanced individual training was something that I knew I wouldn't get anywhere else. Being able to lead and help soldiers and those that were coming in to begin with.
There's a lot I could say about boot camp. There was a lot of bad times and there was a lot of good times, but I learned a lot about myself. I learned that I could do just about anything.
Germans come at us. Had it killed straight through, doctor said you'd have been dead.
There's no camaraderie that I've ever experienced in life that could match the camaraderie that you see in the military.
I'm not sure, but I would tend to think it's probably one of the few times in military history that a blind Army veteran actually drove a tank.
I kind of became the patriotic type to where I was ready to lay down my life and do whatever I had to do for the freedom of this country.
Provides closure for me for the injury and everything that actually happened, because without it, it would still be a blank every day.
I got to compete on the Marine team in 2011, and that was like my exit to therapy.
Weegee will get the gold.
Today we were out here doing some batting practice and some workout drills with former Army veterans.
Once you step on the field, it's just the pains, the worries, the anxiety, all that gone. It's completely out of your head. You're worried about one thing and one thing only, your teammates and winning a ball game.
Every single year, Bonita Springs comes out, and they're one of the biggest supporters of veterans that I have ever experienced in my life. Flags will all be lined up, and it's just an awesome way to honor the people that have served their country. As I get older, I look back, and I'm very proud, but I'm proud because it was service.
It was just the best experience I ever had. I wish I could do it all over again.
Yeah, the band's got to get a couple notes in there, right? They just got a new contract, so that always makes everybody happy. Anyway, we're back on Veterans Radio. Bob Gould, Dale Throneberry, and guest Dale.
Well, I just want to remind people that you just heard the trailer from the documentary Enlisted, that that's going to be on Monday, this coming Monday night, on WDET here in Michigan and Detroit's public television station. I think that's going to, it looks like it's cool. Plus, you can go to their website, which is enlistedfilm.com, and you can already order the DVD. So it's kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's really cool.
All right, you just heard another PSA that we've got going called Stories of Service, that is a fundraiser for the local Fisher House here in Michigan. But joining me on my line in an unofficial status right now is Captain Kate Melcher. And Captain, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you on. So the question of the day, Captain, is why did you join the service and what did you get out of it? I should remind our audience while you're thinking of that, that Captain Melcher is an Apache helicopter pilot, so beware.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to that trailer for Enlisted, and I was listening to all of those reasons, and, you know, I can imagine what their stories are, and I still feel like mine's a little bit different. because, you know, I had no childhood aspirations of being in the military. It was not part of my story. It wasn't where I was headed. I went to college so that eventually I could teach high school government, and I didn't believe I had any business teaching government unless I'd actually worked for the government. So I was in D.C. when 9/11 happened, and when we were hit with anthrax and then ricin and the D.C. sniper, and meanwhile OEF and OEF-1 were kicked off, and here I was in Washington, D.C., working in the United States Senate, and my idealism was starting to leave. And I realized that there were men and women downrange at war, and what was I doing about it? So I had a mentor, a guy by the name of Lieutenant Colonel retired Bill Studi, and he used to joke every single morning. He'd come into my office and say, "Did you ever think about being a military officer?" And every morning I would throw him out saying no. But you know, eventually I started to understand what he was after and why he was encouraging me to enlist. And I did. I enlisted first, then eventually was selected for OCS and flight school. And I was single-minded about the mission that I wanted. I wanted attack aviation. It was at a time when women were not legally allowed in combat. That says nothing about the fact that they'd been in combat for years by that point. But in terms of MLS, that was the closest thing that I could get to the action and the closest place I could be to defend my brothers on the ground.
And I can't say unfortunately, but you did not get to deploy because you had other talents that they wanted you to use, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Needs of the Army, right?
It's needs not needs
what you
of the
want,
Army,
what
right.
the Army needs.
So what did they have you do?
Say again?
What did they have you do?
Well, rather than deploy downrange, they told me things like, there are plenty of Apache pilots that can fly those missions, and there's only one Apache pilot in the Army that knows how to speak to Congress. So they sent me back to D.C. to be a legislative liaison officer, and I represented the National Guard. And we worked real hard to make certain that the men and women downrange had what they needed, up-armored Humvees, the sorts of things that we didn't deploy with early on. So I'm quite proud that I played a role in that.
Captain, this is Bob Gould. Captain, when you were becoming qualified to be an Apache pilot, there were some physical parameters. There were some physical, perhaps, limitations. How did you approach that?
The same way I approach everything in life. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to try and be the best at it. So in terms of physical limitations, I never saw any difference between men and women. There was a standard, and if you met it, you got to do the job. So I passed the AFAST, which is part aptitude and part psychological test, you know, passed all of the physical requirements that I needed to. And probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life is to pass the 64 qualification course.
Just learning how to fly those little machines was the most difficult thing I ever accomplished, I can tell you that.
Yes, sir. It's like wrestling a squirrel. One day you just figure out how to do it.
This is Bob Gould again, Captain. When I, a couple of years ago, I was up in Camp Grayling in Michigan covering the training of the guards people, and they were getting ready to be deployed. And there was one female, and boy, what I noticed is how protective she had 40 brothers. That's for darn sure. And tell us about that. Did you see anything like that?
Well, I will tell you that it's absolutely mutual. I was honored to serve with some of the most talented men I've ever met in my life. And that doesn't go away. You know, I took the uniform off about 4 years ago, and you know, now that I'm back in Michigan, I've found my tribe. I found my military family again, and I am just as protective of them, even though we're not in uniform, as they are of me. It doesn't stop. You know, I would walk through fire for some of my brothers.
This is what we have found with the vast majority of veterans that we've talked to, and I know that Kate is involved in not only in the Fisher House, she's also involved with the Buddy to Buddy program as a mentoring person working there, and so she has carried on her military experiences to what she's doing today. And then, Bob, I would not mess with her because I think
no.
that she could probably break you like a stick.
No. No. But, Captain, this is Bob Gould again. About this camaraderie, what do you feel contributed to that? The camaraderie.
Part of it, I think, comes from the fact that we're an all-volunteer army. It takes a certain set of values and to raise your right hand when you don't have to, and that binds us from the beginning. And through our training, all meeting the same standards, it's you're taught to look for your brother on your right and your left before you're looking out for yourself. So that's honestly part of why Buddy to Buddy was stood up, is because we don't ask for help. Rub some dirt on it and you'll be fine. You know, Buddy to Buddy started with some Vietnam vets that said, you know, we're not going to leave another generation of vets behind. So it's a bunch of honorably discharged veteran volunteers that have been there and done that. And they know how to navigate the VA. They speak the same language, even if we have decades between our service. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care if you were in the Yadrang Valley in Vietnam or if you were coming out of Fallujah. There's still some commonality between our language and the way we carry ourselves and the set of values that we hold. I think all of that goes into the camaraderie.
Well, I agree with you entirely, Kate, and it's an important message for our audience to understand, is that, you know, we are there for our families and we are also there for our comrades. And it's a great feeling. Really, actually, it's a great sensation emotionally to know that you have this group all around you, as Bob pointed out, that is always going to be there for you no matter what.
Absolutely. You know, it's been really important for me because I left Michigan 20 years ago, and through civilian service, military service, my first opportunity to come home was just this last year. And I realized, as a Guard and Reserve state, it's kind of hard to find vets out in the open. There's 650,000 vets in the state of Michigan, but, you know, it's not like you walk into Walmart and you see men and women in uniform that are picking up milk on the way home.
Right.
That's
like I was thinking earlier on the day. You know, we have to get little decals or something put on our forehead that says V for veteran, so people can know. Well, Kate, thank you so very much for being on the program. I can't wait to see you on Wednesday night. I'm really excited to see this program called Stories of Service. And again, it's at Hill Auditorium on Wednesday, starting at 7:00. Do they need to reserve tickets, or can they just walk in the door?
It would be very helpful if they reserve tickets, because they're going fast.
Okay.
And they can do so online. They are free at www.storiesofservice.org.
Will do. Thank you, Captain.
My pleasure.
You are dismissed. We'll see you again soon.
Wow. That was, I know, Apache Hill.
Impressive young woman.
Are we still going, Derek, are we still going to our gal singer? Okay, in 1 minute. All right. Whoa, we are.
Okay, so you know, this is, again, this is kind of an anniversary of a big deal in Bob and my life.
Absolutely.
And Ken and Gary's. And so we want to, and of course we can't do it without you, our listeners. So we want to thank you very much for listening to Veterans Radio over these last 14 years.
And all our friends too that have supported us.
Absolutely.
And all of you, everybody out there.
It has been a privilege to bring these stories to you, and we hope that we can continue bringing them to you for as long as we can.
So. I think that sounds good. Oh, stretch. Oh,
stretch, okay. He's loading it up.
Captain,
probably.
You have something?
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show tonight. It was a really interesting experience, and I would love to be invited again.
Oh, sounds good. 10 seconds.
There we go.
Okay. Come on back next week for Veterans Radio. Until that time, you are dismissed.